On a Friday, it is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. We're talking about the Sheep and Wool Festival that starts today in Jefferson. Thousands of people go to Jefferson County Fair Park. It's about 25 miles east of Madison. And they host hundreds of events on the grounds every year, including this big draw for the Midwest, the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival, with more than 600 sheep and 40 breeds. This is put on by the Wisconsin Sheep Breeders Cooperative, and it's an association of shepherds and sheep enthusiasts with roots that trace back to the late 1800s. Is this festival an annual tradition for you? Do you knit, crochet, weave, or felt? How did you get started? Why do you like it as a hobby? And what are you making right now? Fill us in on the fiber arts. We're at 800-642-1234. Bob Black is chairman of the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival. He's a former sheep producer and a longtime promoter of our state's sheep and wool industry. Bob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, take us to Jefferson. What can we see and do at the Sheep and Wool Festival this year?
Well, there's a lot to do here. We will have a stock dog trial starting this morning, probably somewhere around 8 or 9 o'clock, and it's going to run for 3 days. You'll see about 60 handlers from across the upper Midwest running about 125 dogs. So you get a chance to witness the skills of not only the dogs, but the handlers. And sheep shows will start tomorrow. We've got, I think as you mentioned, close to 600 head here from really both coasts and everywhere in between. So a lot to do.
And so for knitters and felters, what is there to check out?
Well, we have the Country Store, which has about 130 different vendors here from everywhere across the country. Again, both coasts represented. And they will have a chance to show their wares to thousands of people that are going to start coming through this morning. We got everything that you could possibly want in the knitting, felting, weaving business, and everything in between.
And I understand there are classes and workshops that people can take. Can you tell us about what we can learn?
Well, we have the opportunity to learn about felting, weaving, knitting, rug hooking, I guess just about every skill and art form that you can imagine.
And tell us about felting if we're not familiar with it.
Well, it's something I've never done, but there are different forms. There are needle felting, there's wet felting, and I guess it's a hot thing right now in the fiber arts world. So we've got at least three or four different instructors teaching several different methods of felting. These are classes for which we need to be pre-registered, but the opportunities are there, obviously, for another year for anyone that wants to come out and learn how to do this art form.
Can you be a beginner? Is it okay if you come in with no skills?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you tell us about some of the arts and crafts that will be on display?
Well, I'm standing in the vendor building right now, one of the Country Store barns, and I'm looking at some knitted garments. I'm looking at some felted pieces. We have some needle arts here. Just a variety of things are available for people to look at, and it's just amazing. It's actually unbelievable the amount of different things for people to take a look at.
We're talking with Bob Black. He's chairman of the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival and a former sheep producer. You can join in. Are there knitting events in your part of the state? Is there a sheep farm you like to visit? Are you a sheep farmer or a shepherd? What do you want people to know about these animals? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Well, Bob, it must make you just full of pride to see how big this festival has gotten and how it grew up to become this Midwest attraction. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
I can. Actually, the predecessor event was the Wisconsin Sheep Industry Conference, and it was pretty much oriented just towards sheep producers. That ran for close to 25 years. And then as the number of sheep producers attending started to decline and the industry itself, from a producer standpoint, started to wane a little bit, we decided that the next best avenue was to open it up to the other aspect of the sheep industry that up until that point was sort of segregated from the producer side, and that was the fiber arts. And, of course, along with that comes the general public, because they'd like to see what's going on with the fiber arts and with related activities like stock dog trials. So in 2002, we opened it up as the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival, and here we are today.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Renee joining us from Middleton. Hi, Renee.
Hello. I wanted to speak up for the felting classes that are offered there.
Wonderful.
They're fantastic. I make a point of going. I've been going for I don't know how many years, but you have to sign up as soon as that catalog comes out. All of the felters that I know are aware of this. If you want the good classes, you got to make up your mind right away. So there are all sorts of classes, like you talked about. I specialize in the wet felting. You can make scarves. You can make bowls. I make purses. There are people teaching different ways to combine different wools. The different wools felt differently. And it's wonderful for beginners because really all you need is some wool, some soap and water, and a little bit of willingness to work it around.
Renee, how did you get started? What draws you to felting?
I actually came in through knitting. I knit, and I was invited by a friend to go to this to look at the yarns. And one year I was going to take a knitting class, and I didn't sign up soon enough to get a knitting class, but there was a felting class available. And I could not believe that I could make an entire little purse object in one class and come out with it done and ready to go, and it was beautiful and unique.
Oh, well, how fulfilling. Yeah. Well, I hope you learn lots of good things this year. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Vicki now in Racine. Vicki, hi.
Hi. I'm actually on the road to the stock dog trial at the festival.
How cool is that? So what draws you to the festival?
Well, I mainly go for the sheepdog trial, but I love going through the country store barns with all of the fiber products and homemade goods, and just it's a great way to spend a lot of money.
How many years have you been going?
I have been going for probably close to 10 years.
And what about these stock dog trials do you love?
Oh, it's so cool to see the natural instincts of mostly border collies working the sheep with their handlers. It's such a cool relationship between the handlers and the dogs, and it's one of the things that makes it so challenging is that you're dealing with three different living things, a dog, a person, and sheep, and everybody has their own ideas about what they're supposed to be doing.
Well, Vicki, so, thank you so much for the description.
Sure.
We're talking about the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival with its chairman, Bob Black, as our guide. You can join in with your favorite things to do at the festival, your memories of it, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this conversation in just a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival in this installment of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So 40 years ago, the Wisconsin Sheep Breeders Cooperative, they organized the first state sheep industry conference, and it grew to be the largest of its kind in the country. And the rest, as they say, is history. In 2002, the conference format gave way to this festival where thousands of people will gather this weekend at the Jefferson County Fair Park. Are there knitting events in your part of the state? Are you a sheep farmer or a shepherd? What do you want people to know about these animals? Join in at 800-642-1234. Bob Black chairs this festival, and he's a former sheep producer. He stays with us. Bob, as you could hear from those callers, they really get a lot out of this festival. It must make you feel really good that this festival has so many different pieces to it that really reach so many different types of people.
Well, it is kind of interesting how many people partake. You know, we have over 100 volunteers who enthusiastically put their all into making this event happen. And that's the really exciting thing, is that they bring ideas, they bring in their energy, and they put everything they can into it, and they look forward to it every year. So it really is heartening to have that kind of support.
Well, you can't have this festival without sheep. Can you tell us about the sheep that we're seeing this year?
Well, we have probably at least, I'd say, 20 different breeds represented. And we're also the site of the National Romney Show and Sale this year, and we're seeing Romneys coming from both sides of the country, Oregon, New Jersey. It's good to have them here, and we're pleased to have them represented as a national show. So people can take a look starting as early as tonight. There'll be the National Romney Sheep Show, and then the open and junior shows, also the Midwest Shetland Sheep Breeders Association show, will take place over the next 2 days.
What about competitions? Will people be showing these animals?
They will, absolutely. These are open and junior shows. There's a market lamb show on Sunday. We'll probably have somewhere near 200 to 300 different exhibitors out in the ring.
So I understand you also raised sheep. Are there any breeds here that you raised?
No. Actually, the breed that we had for many years was the Dorset Horn, and we don't have those here represented, but we do have a Dorset breed represented, just not the horned version.
What do you like about these sheep and their different breeds? What is really fascinating to you?
Well, we got into the Horn Dorset breed back in 1978, and back then the sheep industry was growing. It had a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of energy, and it was a breed that we had never seen before, and it was virtually the only flock available that we could have bought at the time. And that's
why
how
is
we
that?
Got started. Well, people were getting into sheep. It was a high energy level, and it was hard to find good breeding sheep. We just happened to find a breeding flock of Dorset Horns that was available, and that's how we got started with them.
Do you still have the sheep?
No, we got out 2 years ago. 40 years was enough, and we decided to move on into other activities. One of them, of course, being the festival.
It'll take a little time there. So are all sheep breeds used for their wool or just some?
Well, some are raised primarily for wool. Some are raised primarily for meat. We have a few breeds that are hair sheep. I'm not sure if we have any of those here this weekend. I haven't checked that out yet. But pretty much sheep are, you know, they're universally useful, I guess, if you want to call it. Most breeds that are wool breeds can also be sold for meat, but generally they break down into wool breeds and meat breeds.
We're talking with Bob Black. He chairs the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival, a former sheep producer. You can join in 800-642-1234. Perhaps this festival attracts you for the fiber arts. Does a loved one knit or crochet things for you? What's the best handmade gift someone's ever given you? And what are your favorite places to get yarn in Wisconsin? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Bob, how are the sheep judged? What are the specifications going into to what we look at in these sheep?
Well, if we're looking at a wool breed in the show ring, the judge will take a close look at the fleece on the sheep, looking for uniformity, looking for those qualities for that particular breed. And then they will also look at conformation, soundness. In other words, how does the sheep walk? How is it built, basically? And in a meat breed, they'll look basically at conformation, meatiness, muscling, and again, soundness.
How is a lamb's wool different from a grown animal's wool?
Well, it's a little finer. Once it's grown out after a year and you've sheared them, the natural crimp starts to show up a little better in mature sheep.
And
generally, lambs are more are just a finer fleece, shorter crimp, of course, and shorter clip, of course.
And I understand the sheep actually have to have their wool sheared before they go on show. Is that right?
Well, it depends.
Okay.
In the wool breeds, you can have up to a 2-inch fleece. Generally, when you go into the show ring, that would be approximately 9 months to 12 months of growth. In the meat breeds, many of the breeds are slick shorn. That means they're completely shorn off, so you can see the conformation a little better. But they still also have fitted, what they call fitted shows, where the handler or the exhibitor will trim, make the sheep look, I guess, as good as possible.
Mm-hmm. So do judges look at their wool after it's been turned into yarn? How does that work?
Yes, we do have a skein contest at the festival, and that is for those people who hand spin fiber, and judges will take a look at that yarn and determine, is it uniform? Does it have this particular quality or that quality? And yes, so there is an opportunity to do that.
You've been part of the sheep industry for so many decades. What does sheep farming look like in our state today?
Well, it's very diverse. We have, of course, still meat production. We have wool production. We have diversified businesses based on, I would say, entrepreneurial wool fiber type of industries. We have the sheep dairy industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a broad cross section. Unfortunately, we're not as strong as we used to be in terms of numbers in Wisconsin, but interestingly, there are over 5,000 different premises in the state of Wisconsin that have sheep, which is kind of interesting. That might be one sheep. It might be 200. So they're still there. It's just a different changing face of the industry today.
Yeah, so commercial sheep farming used to be more viable in our state than it is right now?
Well, you know, back in the late 1800s, there were over 2 million head of sheep in the state of Wisconsin, and today it's just a fraction of that.
Wow. How do sheep do in Wisconsin? Is our climate, is our food, you know, what is it like for sheep here?
Oh, it's a great state for sheep production. We have lots of pasture land. It's a great secondary enterprise for a lot of farms, and that's basically what it was over many years. but we're ideally suited for sheep production in this state.
How many times a year will a farmer shear a sheep for wool? Does it depend on the breed?
Generally, it's a once-a-year shearing.
Okay.
And it's probably not. There are some breeds that might shear twice a year, but that's a little unusual.
Before I have to let you go, what is your favorite thing at the festival each year, something you do every year?
I think it's seeing the people. It's really getting a handle on who's excited about this industry. And one of my favorite things is to get on a golf cart and go out in the parking lot and haul people back to their cars after a long day in a class or shopping. And you just see a lot of people from all across the state and the country. And they're pretty happy about having been here, which that's the best part.
Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Bob Black is chairman of the Wisconsin Sheep and Wool Festival, former sheep producer. We have a link, by the way, to the festival at WPR.org/mornings. When we come back, we'll hear about some fun and affordable Midwest getaways. It's right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're getting ideas for weekend fall getaways on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Fall is a great time to sneak in one last quick trip before the weather turns, and this time we're broadening our scope to weekend trips around the Midwest. So with that in mind, do you pack up and head to a favorite destination this time of year? What do you love about fall travel? What activities do you do? Are you all about checking out the leaves turning? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Beth Gopper is editor of MidwestWeekends.com. She's been writing about vacation travel in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa for more than 25 years. Beth, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be here, Kate.
So for fall, is fall really the best time of year for these little getaway weekend trips? What's so great about it?
When you wake up on a fall morning, a fall Saturday, and the air is crisp, it's sunny, you don't want to stay home. Mm. I wouldn't say take one trip this fall. I'd say go somewhere every weekend.
Now, that can get a little pricey. Since it's not the peak summer tourist season, are there still good deals out there to be found?
Oh, yeah. Well, not during the peak fall color weekends, and that would be the last weekend of September and then the first three weekends of October. But now is actually a really good time to go to any destination that is most crowded in the summer. For example, Wisconsin Dells, Door County, any of the Lake Michigan beach towns. The kids are back at school. The budgets are spent for the summer. Not that many people are out until the leaves turn, so now is a really good time to travel. And my go-to place would be camper cabins in state parks, et cetera. But a lot of mom-and-pop motels are not that expensive, especially this time of year.
And you have an idea for some tailgating. one of your fall trip suggestions is get out to a football game if it's a Badger football game if it's on your bucket list. Tell us about what we might be able, how to plan a trip around that.
Well, it's called dynamic pricing, and that means that during a Badgers football game, the hotel rates go out the roof. So I do have some suggestions. Once I stayed at the International Madison Hostel, and that was during the big Art on the Square weekend. And I did sleep in a bunk as if I were still a college student with other people, but it only cost me about $30. So that's an option during the big weekends. And then the good thing about the hostels is they're most crowded in the summer, and it is easier to get a room the other times of the year.
Can adults stay at hostels? I thought they were for youth.
Oh, gosh, no. No. There are some people who are quite well off, especially in Scandinavia. One of the wealthiest persons I know stayed at hostels in Scandinavia. But no, they're for people of all ages. Another good option is there are actually several hostels in Chicago, but the one that's the International Hostel Association hostel, I stayed there once, and there were people of all ages. They just want to save money. And I like to do that, too. I call it the prince and the pauper approach. I like to sometimes spend less money for my lodgings because, really, all you're doing is sleeping, right, in a place like Madison or Chicago. And then I like to spend more money on restaurants or shop a little bit, you know? So it's kind of like the scrimp and splurge way of travel.
Do you have any ideas for fun and affordable activities while you're at this Badger Weekend and you're in and around Madison? What would you suggest?
I would suggest renting a bike and riding some of the bike trails. In fact, if you have a tent or a camper, you could stay at one of the campgrounds. Mm-hmm. The Capitol Springs State Recreation Area is in Farm County Park is on the Capitol City Trail. And so you can actually camp there, and you can head north to Madison, or you could head south on the Badger State Trail all the way to the Illinois border, or you could go west to Mount Horeb. So you could have yourself a little biking weekend. That's always very cheap.
Talking with Beth Gopper, she's editor of MidwestWeekends.com, and you can join in. Do you have a favorite weekend trip or quick getaway in Wisconsin this time of year? What city or area should not be missed? How do you make your trips affordable? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Beth, you mentioned there in passing Wisconsin Dells, and in the summer, you know, people flock there for the outdoor water parks. In the winter, we go there for the indoor water parks. But what about the fall? What type of opportunities can we go there in the fall for?
Well, the fall is a really nice time in the Dells, and it's shockingly quiet. People don't really think about going there in the fall. I don't know why. They can go on a cruise. That would be the main thing I would do along the Wisconsin River and see the actual Dells, the sandstone formations that made it so famous. You could take a little train ride. You could check out some of the state natural areas. You could go to Mirror Lake State Park, do a little kayaking, hiking. It's, you know, people go there for the parks, but the nature is wonderful.
Yeah, it's, as you point out, that, you know, we go there for these water parks, but, you know, what drew us there in the first place was the Dells, the nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still beautiful, and the color is really nice.
Can we get better water park deals if we're willing to head somewhere outside the Dells?
Yeah, there are a lot of water parks all over the region. Let me see. They're not always cheaper, but the reason the Dells can be cheaper is because there's so much competition there. So you have so much capacity that at the slower times of years, their rates drop faster. So I would say right up until the Minnesota school break weekend in late October, where they're packed, now is a really good time, and then November is a really good time to go.
You also recommend checking out some fall color in Wisconsin's waterfall country. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about this trip idea?
Well, there's Wisconsin has lots of waterfalls. The most famous would be the ones in Patterson State Park, and then Amnicon is beautiful in northwest Wisconsin, and then Potato River Falls in northeast Wisconsin. But if you go to the really quiet part of Nicolet National Forest, there are lots of little falls. And this would be a fun road trip if you just like to poke around looking at stuff. You need a good map. But one nice thing about this area is there are some cabins in Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest. And, you know, Wisconsin does not have camper cabins in its state parks, unlike all the states around it. So this is kind of a cool little deal. On weekends, the cabins are only $45.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And I know it's too early to start thinking about the holidays, but a little planning ahead could result in a really cool experience later. Can you tell us about how we can get involved in the decorating of a Victorian bed and breakfast in Milwaukee?
Yeah, this is something I always put on my my story about cheap fall getaways. There's a B&B there called the Schuster Mansion, and they have a great deal if you want to help them hang their mistletoe and their other decorations for the holidays. They will let you stay two free nights. Pretty good deal, huh?
That is a very good deal. I'll hang some decorations for that.
Well, put your name in early.
Well, what about bed and breakfast? Are there some favorite ones you have around Wisconsin or in the Midwest?
Yeah, I mean, I like all bed and breakfasts. They're a great place to stay if you want to get to know the area, because they're much more personal kind of lodgings. The innkeeper is really there to help you with your vacation. They're not cheap, however, and for fall weekends, you should book them up really fast, and actually you should book every fall lodgings like right now.
Right now, because otherwise it's going to fill up.
It's pretty much already full up, but people cancel.
Are people going for the leaves? Are they going for festivals? What is the big draw out there when we head out for the weekend?
Oh, it's in the fall. It's just plain gorgeous. I mean, we're going to have the sumac turning color in like a week farther north. And then it's just a constant progression of pops of color. But the festivals are a biggie, and they are starting already. This weekend right now is a really big weekend. It's surprising. There's just in Wisconsin, there's Sputnik Fest in Manitowoc, and Whooping Crane Festival in Princeton, and the Carriage Classic at Parade of Sheen. There's just a lot going on, and it's not hot. You're not sweaty. There's just something about fall that's invigorating. Everyone wants to be outside.
Do you think that you should do like one festival in a weekend, or is there a way you can, as these festivals are structured, that you might be able to take in a couple?
Yes, and I do have a story about that, about the best weekends for every weekend of fall, places where you can go and catch three or four festivals at one time. And, for example, this weekend in Minnesota, I actually did this once. I went to Defeat of Jesse James Days in Northfield, and then it was only another half an hour to a little town called Manterville for their Marigold Days, and then it's only another, 20 minutes or so, to St. Peter for the Rock Bend Folk Festival. And
oh,
I did
wow.
all of those in one day. And, you do that and you think, oh, this is a day well spent.
We're talking with Beth Gopper. She is editor of MidwestWeekends.com. And you can join in 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite weekend trip or getaway? Where do you go? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back for more Wisconsin Weekend in a minute here on the Ideas Network. Oh, the autumn air is crisp, trees maybe turning in your neck of the woods, and we're getting ideas on weekend fall getaways here on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're finding out places that will leave us recharged and show us a relaxing fall weekend, keeping budget-conscious traveling in mind. We're packing light, loading up the podcasts, hitting the open road. What do you love about fall travel? What activities do you enjoy in these weekends? Is it the food, the color, new hiking, biking trails? Do you meet up with family or friends for fall excursions? Share your itinerary, 800-642-1234. Beth Gopper is editor of MidwestWeekends.com, and she stays with us for pointers on where to go. Beth, let's go beyond Wisconsin just a bit, starting in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And that's where we can find the Porcupine Mountains Wilderness State Park, a favorite of yours. Can you tell us about why fall is a great time to go there?
Oh, my goodness. It's just gorgeous, for one thing. I don't know if you've ever been to Lake of the Clouds. It's spectacular in any season, but in the fall, it's the color is amazing. And the Upper Peninsula in general is a good time for a good place to go for inexpensive travel because it's so remote. You know, Ironwood is farther from Detroit than Detroit is from Washington, D.C.
Wow. When you put it in that perspective.
Yeah, not a lot of people go there. It takes some time to get there, although not from Wisconsin. But it has a lot of national forests. And so I would say the UP has the best color in the Midwest.
And what are some of the best spots to hit? I mean, if it's pretty wide open up there. Yeah.
The Porkies. And the Porkies are, that's one of Michigan's marquee parks. And they have a lot of places to stay there. If you have a group, and if you're looking for inexpensive travel, always travel with a group because then you split expenses. And they have a lodge. You can just split the expense. It has two bathrooms. I stayed there with my outdoors group, in fact, in winter. But in the fall, you can stay in their yurts also. And then if you're pretty intrepid and you don't mind walking a while, they also have cabins. I believe they have 19 cabins and yurts in the Porky. So you have a roof over your head. You know, it's easy to save money in the summer with a tent. But in the fall and the winter, yeah, it's kind of nice to have a roof over your head.
Well, let's jump over to Minnesota, and there's an upcoming event where you can get close to wolves. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. This is something that you can do year-round. So this is at the International Wolf Center, and they have a Wolves After Dark program, and it's during the Minnesota school break.
Is this around Ely?
It's in Ely, yes.
Okay,
so that's obviously gorgeous because of the fall color is, beautiful. And so this only costs $70 and $40 for kids, and you stay overnight in the International Wolf Center, and, you know, you bring a sleeping bag, but you get to see the wolves. You get to be there for the wolves' feeding and program, and then they give you pizza at night, and they give you breakfast in the morning, and you can actually do the same sleepover program at a lot of museums around the Midwest, including almost all of the ones in Chicago and the Milwaukee Public Museum. And they all cost about $60 or $70.
Well, take us to Chicago, a quick drive for many Wisconsin residents. What's happening there this fall that could be fun and affordable?
Oh, Chicago is always affordable if you can find a cheaper place to stay. That's the biggie. The hotel tax in Chicago, I think it's like 14% now. So that really raises the cost. But you can stay at a hostel for more like 30. And Chicago also has, it must be a new deal there, but they have three other little hostels. They're called hostels. They're like hostel hotels. And some of the rooms you can stay at cheaply because you have to share them. And some you have to go to the bathroom down the hall. But once you get there, everything is cheap. The festivals are free. You can even get a Chicago greeter to show you around town for free.
Wow.
You can get a bike, and there's bike sharing, and you ride along the lakefront trail for 18 miles. That's what I would do.
Well,
I would splurge on a food tour.
You know, for some reason, that just doesn't surprise me. Beth, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk with you, Kate.
Beth Gopper is editor of MidwestWeekends.com, and we have a link to Beth's travel ideas at WPR.org/mornings. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum remembering a fellow reporter.
Wisconsin Public Radio lost a dear colleague and friend over the weekend.
Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Glenn Moberg covered Central Wisconsin for WPR for 15 years. As a reporter and talk show host of WPR's Route 51, Glenn's love for his community was apparent on the airwaves and off. Rob Menser is WPR's current reporter based in Wausau. He knew Glenn for years, and he shares this essay on his legacy.
There's a moment I shared with Glenn Moberg that I keep thinking about. It was 2010, and we were standing around before a political debate that Glenn was moderating. I was a panelist.
Welcome to the U.S. Senate debate between incumbent Democrat Russ Feingold and Republican Ron Johnson. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin.
I'd been a newspaper reporter for about 3 years at that point, and getting to ask a question in the debate between Senator Russ Feingold and challenger Ron Johnson, it felt like a big deal. I mean, C-SPAN was there. It was Glenn who had made the debate happen. He was the one who pulled together a coalition of local media. He was the one who dealt with the campaigns. He could tell I was nervous, so he said to me, "Your question is going to be the bomb." And he added a curse word in the middle of the phrase, something I cannot say on the radio. It made me laugh, and it helped me shake off my jitters and feel good about what I was there to do. Here's the point of that story when I think about it now. It's that Glenn was generous enough and emotionally astute enough to reach out to me in just the right way. It was funny, it was supportive, it was enthusiastic about journalism, and that was Glenn. The news that Glenn had died was not a surprise. He had inoperable stomach cancer. He knew what that meant, and he was extraordinarily open about it, so it wasn't a surprise, but it was still a blow. Glenn had a daughter and a son. He was a part-time jeweler with his wife, Mary Beth. He played guitar. This is him playing right now. He fished. He swam in Wisconsin's lakes. He was 67 years old. I knew Glenn professionally. I can't claim to have known him the way his closest friends or longtime colleagues knew him. But, along with my colleague Shireen Seewert, I'm the one who works in Glenn's old office. When I applied for the job at WPR, it was to the position Glenn vacated when he retired, something he had to do earlier than he'd intended because he had cancer. I walk by his many radio awards in the hallway every morning, no pressure. Right now I'm sitting in what I still think of as his chair, speaking into his microphone. About a week after I started in this job in the spring, Glenn came in and spent a couple of hours with me talking about making radio. I was moved that he would take the time. He was very sick by then. But let me tell you, our conversation was super practical and useful to me as a new radio reporter. I started using some of his tips immediately. Glenn wrote a public post on Facebook in December about facing the end of his life. "Death," he wrote, "has a great way of focusing the mind. I'm trying to use the time I have left in the best way I can, making the world a slightly better place than it was the day before." One day a few months ago, I had used something he taught me in a radio story, and I thought, I should tell Glenn. So I sent him a message thanking him and letting him know his lessons had made a difference. He wrote me back, "You made me smile, Rob." As it turned out, he had about 3 months to live. I'm glad I told him. No one who knew him will be surprised that he showed that same grace and humor and love for journalism in the very last interaction we had. That's just who Glenn was.
That was WPR's Rob Menser reflecting on the career of Glenn Moberg, a WPR reporter and host who passed away this weekend. We're going to leave you with a message from Glenn. He shared it during his final appearance on WPR's Route 51.
If I could pass along one message to people, is treat every day that you're on this earth like it could be your last day. Be nice to people. If you love somebody, let them know that you love them.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
I'm here in Wausau, Wisconsin, USA. I should be happy as a man can be. I can hunt and I can hike and I can fish and I can bike, and in the wintertime I can ski. But I'm staring at my shoes at the Bullfalls Brew, and I know why I'm feeling...